Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Today, we celebrate February 16th as Elizabeth Paratovich Day to mark the signing of an anti-discrimination law that she was instrumental in helping to get passed. That was February 16th, 1945, 76 years ago. Well, in February 1988, this day was set aside to honor her, and Diane Benson, a Tlingit woman now living in Petersburg, set out to write a play which took a life of its own. Yesterday, Diane reflected on that project, one of many passion projects that she's pursued in her 66 years. Diane, you have had the most amazing life. You've been in the running for Lieutenant Governor, Congress, and I'm amazed even to find out that you were once a truck driver on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, but you've also been a writer, an activist, and I guess, what are you doing now at this phase in your life?
Well, I'm involved with a number of things, but first and foremost, I'm retired. I'm grateful to say, after working for a number of years with the University of Alaska. And I am currently involved with LION.
That's the Learning Inside Out Network.
Which is a program that really works with people who are incarcerated so that they have voice. And I'm very much enjoying it. I'm working on the creative side of things, which is really fun. We're building a magazine, actually. And so we'll see what happens.
Why are you so passionate about working with the incarcerated?
For a number of reasons. Any marginalized people is of interest to me because I've never felt that it was just to have people marginalized to the extent that we do in this country. That includes those who are incarcerated, because we incarcerate more people in this country than really the rest of the world per capita. And so anything that helps provide voice, because I think a voice is healing when you're able to express and others hear you, that's really a healing thing. And since it's been so difficult for inmates to really have those opportunities, this is something I enjoy. The other fact of the matter is that we have a lot of Alaska Native people, and of course, people of color, period, behind bars well beyond the majority population. So those are things we're going to have to look at and remedy.
So when did you first hear Elizabeth Paratovich's story? And what kind of an impact did it have on you?
Oh, my. I met her husband when I was a teenager. And he worked for BIA, I believe, as a superintendent of education.
So there's Roy Paratovich.
He was just a mountain of a man in my mind. And I was 16 then, and he told me, stay in school. So I did. From there, I his name was on my radar. And when I went, actually moved to Anchorage later in my 20s, I got to spend time with him. And especially that year or two before he passed. And he told me about Elizabeth, and he spoke so fondly of her and so highly of her. I thought, what a remarkable thing. This must be great love, you know, the way he spoke about his wife, his late wife. But it didn't really register that she was so extraordinary as to have, you know, made this speech before the legislature. And for me at the time, that would have been a huge, brave thing to do. I couldn't even imagine it. So I was inspired. I was particularly inspired because they are both from my tribe. And not having and hearing voice throughout my life of my own people doing extraordinary things, this was really an eye-opener.
So I met you years ago when you were about to perform a one-woman play at the Alaska Native Heritage Center about Elizabeth Paratovich. And I saw you on the stage, and it was just amazing. You were wearing the period clothing. You had the pillbox hat. And I was just struck by this uncanny resemblance that you had to her. It was eerie, almost.
Well, it's funny you use that word, because that's the same word I heard when her granddaughter saw me. But she came in when I was setting up props for the play, and I didn't know who she was. All I know is someone came in and quietly circled me. And I just kind of stood there, and she was soaking it in, I guess. And then she says, you look so much like my grandmother, it's eerie. And that's when I really came to know that I did look like her, I guess, a bit. Enough that even children would say, you look like the lady in the poster, or you look like the lady in the book. Kids would call me Mrs. Paradovich. I think it's like one of those things as an actor, you want to become that person when you're performing, to give it your all. But it also did something else to me, I think, at a very profound level, because as I immersed myself in a role that was really new for me, a woman who was so poised and articulate, because I just didn't see myself that way, but to be able to generate this character and bring her to life. I mean, the first performance I had at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, one of my first ones, when it was covered by the press and the room was packed, and a woman who knew Elizabeth, was friends with Elizabeth, an elder, stood up in the audience and was in tears and saying, it's like you brought Elizabeth back to life. That was a very emotional period, that particular performance. People were touched, particularly at that time, and this was 20 years ago now. We've been going through so much with murdered Native women and the unresolved cases, the paintball incident that went national, these horrific racist acts, and that appeared to be racist-driven. I think it was pretty clear. These kinds of things were going on. And so it was a very emotional experience to be performing the play in that climate and to have this kind of response. So yeah, it's quite a journey.
And for those people who may not recall or have heard of it, the paintball was when these young men were going around targeting homeless Native men and spraying them with these paintballs.
The thing about paintballs, it's very painful. And they would lure them to the car, like they're asking directions or something. And the really sad part was it was from the high school that was near my house in Chugiak, these students. And I mean, they were the high school students. And then when the person came towards the car to give them directions, they shot him in the face with a paintball. And that's, you know, that in itself is an assault. So it wasn't just like getting paint on them.
When you decided to write this play, I mean, what was the trigger for that?
When Stephen Cooper had signed the bill to create Elizabeth Paradovich Day, that was really it.
Governor Steve Cooper.
And it seemed like, oh, we should really do something. And what I found was that a lot of people didn't know who she was. And thought, we need to help people know who she was. And plus, what a great story, an inspiring story as a woman. Because Elizabeth spoke up in territorial days when women really weren't heard a lot or welcomed to be heard. And that such was the case, let alone a woman of color. So the interest in writing something about her had been in my heart and for 10 years. And in fact, I'd written one right after the passage. And I wrote this full-length play. It just wasn't good enough for me. It was a great effort. 10 years later, I wrote the one woman play, My Spirit Raised Its Hand, for the Alaska Native Heritage Center, per their request that I do something for Elizabeth Paradovich Day, and ended up doing that for 6 years.
It seems like it would be very hard to encapsulate all the things in her life in a short play.
It was actually challenging, but at the same time, I love monologue and I love that creative process of an imagination to take and move a character from one place to another place in another time. So I have Elizabeth at home doing dishes in the beginning and looking out the window and appreciating ravens and eagles sitting together in a tree, and then taking her on a walk where she runs into the sign that says no natives, no dogs allowed, taking her into the space of giving a presentation to the Alaska Native Sisterhood Convention. So in this way, I revealed what they were living with and the kinds of things they had to say and their concerns about racism in that period. And in that period, it was fairly blatant in that they couldn't get their kids into public schools in certain places because they wouldn't allow Native children there, or they felt, some of them felt like they were going to lower their standards. The schools felt like, a school board member, for example, felt that the standards would be lowered if they allowed Native children. There were other things too, like they were turned away when they wanted to lease a nice house, and they were turned away. So Roy and Elizabeth were, you know, very familiar from personal experience, the racism that existed, and certainly more broadly, Native people across the state. And you consider the impact of boarding schools that pulled children away unwillingly from their families. So there were all those kinds of things. But they were very busy on social issues and even subsistence issues and things.
Would you mind at this point reading from your one-woman play?
Sure. There was a documented incident. So I have this within the play. I'll share it. I had this friend, a lovely woman by the name of Henrietta. She was a white woman, a teacher who was married to a Thinkit man from the village of Cake. Well, one day, Henrietta left Cake for Juneau to shop for groceries and winter supplies. You see, there were many things that were not available in the village, so sometimes a person would rather make a trip to the nearest town to purchase things like, oh, material for sewing, fruits if they could be found, big bags of rice or large cans of coffee, things like that. It was also an opportunity for a woman to get her hair done. And since Henrietta was in Juneau, she set out to get her hair permed as well at a local beauty parlor. And she made the appointment for the next day. Later on that day after shopping, she of course wished to visit family and so was having a walk with her sister-in-law and her two children, who naturally were Thinkit. The owner of the beauty salon saw them all walking down the street. Well, the next day when Henrietta arrived at the beauty shop for her appointment, the owner told her, "I'm sorry, we don't cater to Indian trade." The shop owner had assumed that she was Native. I can tell you, Henrietta let that shop owner know her mind. "I am 100% Swiss," she told him, "and I wouldn't take a perm from you if it was free." The owner followed her down the street, probably red-faced, clumsily trying to apologize. Now, Henrietta was an honorary member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood, and we of the ANS and ANB agreed that this refusal of service was unacceptable. At the same time, still, regardless of citizenship, some of our children, Native children, were being denied admittance into the public schools in some places. Well, we could tolerate these prejudices no more.
How did you come about the story?
Well, Thinkit and Haida Central Council had put together a wonderful booklet on Elizabeth. And within that booklet was this story on Henrietta. And so when I spoke with and validated many things and got more details on various aspects of Elizabeth and her experience, I did so by speaking to people who knew her personally, who were there when she was speaking before the territorial legislature. It was great to hear these stories firsthand from people and the way they felt when they heard her speak, relationships they all had with one another. And, you know, just like any community, you hear some of the good stuff and some of the, oh, but they did this or, you know, that kind of thing.
The big moment in the play is her speech to the territorial legislature when she sort of scolds them in a very dignified way, but powerful way. And I wondered, Are those words in your play her words? How did you come to write this part of the play?
Well, I had to tie a few pieces together. And the reason is, and take a little bit of license there to do so, but it is her words as reported by witnesses and also by newspapers that wrote about when she spoke. I mean, everyone was stunned and amazed that she could literally turn the ears of legislators red by being so not only articulate, but very clearly stating what is wrong and that it needs to be changed, and do it in such a forceful manner, and yet with the softest of words, really.
It was kind of one of those moments in history, and no one can predict when those moments happen or how they take place. But why was she a person so suited for the moment?
Well, I suppose we all wonder about how we end up in a place and somehow we're in the wrong place at the wrong time or the right place at the right time. She learned and I think became so articulate about issues that are difficult to talk about. What can be more difficult to talk about than racism? Look at where we are today. We have the worst time trying to deal with this, and it becomes a new experience generation after generation. And yet she was able to do so because of her oratory skills. Her and Roy were both very articulate with the English language. They'd both gone to college. They had that experience where most people didn't have a college education. And so I think that was extremely helpful. She had the grounding in her Thinket roots and in Thinket language, but she also was truly Christian in the truest sense of the word, in that embracement of all people are equal, that you do good in your life. And I think she became very passionate about that. And, you know, she died at a very young age, at 47. But as she matured in life, she, I think, really found the way to be extremely clear. I mean, she was in her 30s when she did the speech before the legislature, and so was probably at the top of her game in many ways. She was always doing really social-oriented things that where she worked to improve a situation, to change something for the treatment of people, for what was just, as she saw it.
So would you mind now reading a passage from your play where she gives the speech to the lawmakers?
Yeah, and I should say the speech contains all the words that were known for her to have said. We can know that she made these statements. I would not have expected that I, who am barely out of savagery, would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights. When my husband and I came to Juneau and sought a home in a nice neighborhood where our children could play happily with our neighbors' children, we found such a house and had arranged to lease it. When the owners learned that we were Indian, they said no. Would we be compelled to live in the slums? The doors to some of the public schools are still closed to our children. In one Juneau school, 11 Native students were denied access. Signs make it quite clear that I, as well as dogs, are not allowed in certain establishments. Many hotels and restaurants still turn us away. Well, discrimination occurs in many ways, let me assure you. There are three kinds of persons who practice discrimination. First, the politician, who wants to maintain an inferior minority group so that he can always promise them something. And second, the Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who aren't quite sure of their social position and so are nice to you on one occasion and can't see you on the next, depending on who they are with. And third, the great Superman, who believes in the superiority of the white race. But it is this kind of perpetuated thought that serves to segregate and discriminate, and it has forced the finest of our race to associate with trash. In response to Senator Shattuck's earlier question, do we believe that the proposed bill would eliminate discrimination? Well, have you eliminated larceny or murder by passing a law against it? Do your laws prevent those crimes? No law will eliminate crime, but at least you as legislators can assert to the world that you recognize the evil of the present situation and speak your intent to help us overcome discrimination. Overcome discrimination for all Alaskans.
Wow, you just reading that brings back all kinds of emotions, and I admit a little bit of a tear in my eye. And, you know, that was nothing like what it was watching you stand up in front of a crowd and deliver those words. So what happened to the play?
Well, I ended up performing it several times more after that. I kept saying, this is the last time, this is the last time. And I said, I need it, you know, and one reviewer had written that the play really needed to be a film. And here was a great launching point. And the play was already there. So it was a great calling card for doing a film.
And we will talk about that film when we come back. You know, it was one of her big passion projects, Diane Benson's, as both a writer, researcher, and an actress. And that film was called For the Rights of All, a docudrama that chronicled the early Alaska Native civil rights movement. But first, a little musical tribute to Elizabeth Paradovich's birthday. She was born on July 4th, 1911, and somehow it seems appropriate to play Yankee Doodle.